And thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and we're here on Progressive Radio Network, Ari Knowles Network, PRN.FM, where you can listen live to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z every Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m. Or, if that doesn't work for you, you can tune in anytime, day or night. So that is great. So you can always just listen in, you know, at your convenience to any show right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. So what we'd like to do today is tell you about our guest. And he is Kiran Krishnan, and that's K-R-I-R-A-N. He is a research microbiologist and has been involved in the dietary supplement and nutrition market for the last 16 years. He comes from a strict research background, having spent several years with hands-on research and development in the fields of molecular medicine and microbiology at the University of Iowa. And he completed postgraduate research in molecular biology and virology. Kiran is the chief scientific officer at Physicians Exclusive LLC and Microbiome Labs. He is a frequent lecturer on the human microbiome at medical conferences and is also an expert guest on radio. We're so happy to have him as ours today. And he is currently involved in three novel human clinical trials on probiotics and the human microbiome. And on today's show, we'll share the latest information on how to provide the best probiotic solutions for you and your family to support gut health. So thank you so much for joining us today.
You are welcome, and thank you so much for having me.
So what, I know you're at a conference actually as we speak.
I am, yeah, and so we are talking from Salt Lake City. I'm in a hotel. But I'm very happy to be able to join you still.
Oh, good. Well, thank you for making that extra effort to be with us today. Now, it's very interesting because let's talk about some of the terms we threw out there, which some of our listeners may know and some may not know. What does microbiome even mean?
Yeah, the microbiome is a term that we use to basically encompass all of the microbes, and including their genetic elements and how they interact with the host. So our body is completely full of microbes, both inside the body and outside the body. Of course, our skin, our nasal passages, our urogenital tracts, all of those are covered with a whole variety of microbes. Inside of the body, we have upwards of 1,500 different species of bacteria that live in our gut. We've got 100 trillion cells of bacteria that live in our gut compared to the 10 trillion that make up the entire human body. So we're actually 10 times more bacteria in terms of cell count than we are human. And all of them also have their genetic elements. You know, we think of our genes and our chromosome as being the blueprint to our cells. But what we're starting to realize is that the genetics from the microbes are actually even more prevalent and important to some degree for our health and well-being. So microbiome encompasses all of those elements.
Now, many people have heard that term in terms of it being something that's useful to keep things healthy in the body in terms of digestion.
Yep, exactly. Because the microbiome, a lot of times when people are talking about the microbiome, they're referring to the whole host of bacteria that live within the digestive tract. And, of course, those bacteria within the digestive tract, their first role is in digestion itself. But they go well beyond that. They actually have been shown to drastically influence how the brain works. You know, whether you are a glass half empty or glass half full person. So your whole perspective on life can be determined by the types of bacteria you have in your gut. Your body weight, you know, whether you're a lean person or you tend to be heavy and have issues with weight. Even things like your knee pain can be associated with the types of bacteria you have in your gut. So it affects
literally
everything.
Wow, wait a minute.
Everything.
Wait, I'm not going to let you just go past that one. That's pretty intense. What could you possibly mean? Karan, that knee pain could have to do with something going on in your gut. I mean, when we look at modern medicine today, you know, people would go to even completely different doctors if they had digestive issues versus a knee pain issue, and those doctors would probably not even look at, unless they were going to an integrative physician, that there might be any relationship. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is the crux of what's so important with these new medical discoveries. So let's talk about, yeah, how the knee pain could relate to the gut. So one of the most prevalent reasons for knee pain, most people suffer, especially once you get into your 50s and 60s, is due to rheumatoid arthritis. Right, and rheumatoid arthritis, RA, let's abbreviate that, is a autoimmune condition. And most autoimmune conditions now have been shown to start in the gut, because the gut is also the site of the vast majority of your immune tissue within your body. So a lot of how the immune system itself works, whether it goes haywire and starts attacking your own body, which is in the case of autoimmunity, or it starts attacking the wrong things with the wrong type of immune cells in the case of allergies, all of those things start in the gut. And in large part, it's the responsibility of the bacteria within the gut to actually train the immune system and suppress them in the case of unfavorable immune responses, or increase their effect in the case of infections and things that you really do need your immune system to amplify itself. So you could be going and getting all kinds of therapies on your knee. You could be going to a physical therapist. You could be taking pain medications, anti-inflammatories, all these things, when really your problem is the types of bacteria that you have in your gut. And really that's the cause of it. And without treating that cause, oftentimes you're just kind of managing the pain. You know, so it's an amazing connection. And that's one of the things I do when I go and speak at a lot of these conferences, is making those connections for practitioners and doctors and physicians all over the U.S. and, in fact, the world, so that, you know, they're thinking beyond the source of the pain or what they believe to be the source of the pain.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thinking beyond. I mean, that's what in integrative medicine, or what's sometimes called holistic medicine, there's a real view of the body being one interactive unit, not necessarily divided up into one area where there may be pain and then another area where there may be digestion. And I think that's vastly complicated by the fact that many of the pharmaceuticals that they use, let's say for pain, since that's what we were talking about, something like a nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drug in the case of knee pain, actually creates more dysbiosis.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
absolutely.
Well, let's find that term. What is dysbiosis?
And that's a great thing to bring up, and a great term that's often used within medical circles and scientific circles. So dysbiosis basically describes an imbalance of bacteria. Now, you know, one of the things that people often forget is your gut will have both good and what we would call bad bacteria. Now, bad bacteria is only bad once they reach a certain volume within the gut, right? So virtually all bacteria, even the ones that can cause disease, that are naturally found in the gut, have a role within the gut itself. They do something in there. You know, they're part of the team. But the biggest problem happens is when, let's say, a course of antibiotics comes along and wipes out a lot of the bacteria within the gut, and then when they regrow, the bad bacteria come back in higher proportions, and so now the proportion of bacteria is totally off in the body, and that is dysbiosis. That's what sets up virtually, I mean, it's hard to think of a condition or a chronic disease that's not related to the gut. You know, nowadays, the more and more you dig into the science, the more and more you start to see the gut is where everything starts, or at least plays a significant role. And what you bring up is absolutely true. You know, you could be taking COX inhibitors and other pain meds for your knee pain, which actually further damage the gut and further perpetuates the problem. And you know, not really looking at the source. So that's a great example that you brought up.
Yeah, and going back to doing something like helping to balance the natural microbiome, which is a combination, like you said, of it's kind of a community of microorganisms that are known to live in us. And some people feel like that's a yucky concept, you know, to use it not so scientific. But actually, that is the truth. We're walking around and, you know, whoever we think we are, which is a human consciousness in the body. But in terms of the body, it's almost like an apartment house that's just full of all kinds of things that are in there, including a vast array of microorganisms.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, in many ways, they are really running the show. You know, the latest estimates are that somewhere around 90 to 95% of all metabolic functions, that's all the chemical reactions that happen in our body every single day to help us wake up and eat food and do everything that we do, are coded for by the genes that come with the bacteria. So we're actually using bacterial genes and the compounds that they produce for us in our gut to actually function and live as a human being. And without them and without all those genes that they provide, we would not be able to do the things we do. There's a whole area of study called proteomics, and it's a big fancy word, but proteomics basically studies all the proteins that are made by this whole host of bacteria that live within your gut that are essential to human health. Right, so these are proteins that our body can't make ourselves, and they're absolutely essential to our health. They've identified over 1,000 proteins that are made just by the microbes within the gut that are essential for our health that we cannot make ourselves. So that's how important they are, and in many ways they are driving the show. So a lot of microbiologists will now think of the human that we would recognize as human being really is just kind of a vessel for these microbes. You know, and they have kind of gotten together and created this system, like you said, the apartment complex, which is interesting. You've got all these tenants together in the apartment complex that coordinate with one another to allow for the propagation and the stability of the entire building. And without any one of them, or if you have too many of one kind, you really throw off the stability of the building.
Well, that's a really good way to put it. It's a good analogy. Now, it gets even deeper because I've been working on a presentation that I'm doing in terms of the gut-brain reaction and the fact that these microorganisms can also send out things that are like hormonal messengers that can actually create various actions on the part of the human host. Well, for example, can increase sugar cravings because that's what the microbes want as a food source.
Absolutely. That's and I always say that your bacteria can make you eat a cupcake, and I think there's a article with that similar title out there floating around on the internet that people can look up. And it's absolutely true. You know, they create neurotransmitters, which are neuron signals. So these are things that signals, chemical signals that travel up neurons. They can get to the brain and influence your behavior. Like you said, there's a whole host of bacteria and fungus within the body that want sugar, that want simple carbohydrates, and they thrive on that. So in order for them to survive, in order to protect their survival, they send these messages up your vagus nerve that connects your gut directly to your brain and make you crave sugar so that you feed them. So it's for their purpose. Now, the other healthier bacteria do better with complex carbohydrates and fibers and things like that, and they tend to be lower, closer to the lower bowel and towards the end of the lower bowel. It's a little bit harder for them to send signals than it is for the bacteria in the small bowel. So the small bowel bacteria tend to win out on the number of signals that they send, and a lot of times people tend to have more sugar cravings than cravings for spinach. Right. And so, and that's one big reason. And so if people have that in mind and they can be more conscious of those kind of things and the effects and who's pulling the strings, when you do have that sugar craving, think to yourself, wait a minute, you know, I'm being manipulated here by one of these guys in my gut.
You know, oh, really? Isn't that a great concept? I know. When I first realized that, to me, it was mind-blowing, actually.
There's
sort of a group consciousness here that regulates our activity. And I think that having shared that with many, many patients over the many years that we've been involved in this, it's interesting to note that you actually are sort of a group intelligence in there in your body. But when you can override those cravings, though. So many people find when they do make the determination that they're going to eat less sugar, it seems that after about 3 days, you're actually, it's easier in terms of the cravings. Now, is that, Karan, perhaps because the bacteria start to die off, the ones that have that, you know, that signaling mechanism, and so that you're getting less of that those signals? I mean, I'm not sure that that's the case, so I'm just wondering what you think.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely correct. And in fact, it's an ecology issue, you know. And so, if people think about their gut as a really diverse garden, and you've got some weeds growing in the garden, and the weeds like a particular type of feed, and if you hold off on giving the garden that type of feed, the weeds tend to get weaker and die off, and then the nicer plants start to grow and overcome. So yeah, absolutely, you're right. It, because we're changing the ecology by what we feed that environment, we can manipulate basically what it makes us do. So if people do, you know, spend 3, 4, 5 days fighting off those cravings, you're basically battling against these guys that are in there pulling the strings and trying to influence you. And if you think about it that way, it may give you a little bit more incentive to make that fight, you know, and stand up for yourself, if you will, right? So you're really trying to say, listen, bacteria, I'm not going to fall into this trap again. I'm not going to let you influence me. And then you need to support the good bacteria that's not going to make you crave sugar. So every time you crave sugar, you eat a piece of spinach. You know, you eat some lettuce. So you eat something that gives fiber to the good bacteria that should be taking over the space. And like you said, it takes only 3-4 days usually, and the cravings start to go away because those bacteria die off.
Yes, and that's the interesting thing that researchers like yourself, Karan, you know, help to explain to people. I'm sure that people have experienced where if they stop eating really sugary foods, they crave it, and if they, you know, use their willpower, let's say, and have healthy food available, I find that really helps. So you have it with you. You're not just out in the road. You actually have with you, like a cut up avocado or something to replace grabbing mm-hmm. that candy bar. About 3 days later, the cravings actually start to back off. But it's an interesting thought that the reason is because you're getting less signaling from these microbes that want that sugar. Yeah, really, yeah. Really mind-opening, I think, if this is new information for any of our listeners. Well, what is exactly the Human Microbiome Project that you are involved with?
The Human Microbiome Project is actually a huge NIH research consortium, really. And consortium basically just means a collective work from a whole bunch of different scientists all over the world, really. I think there are well over 200 scientists, researchers involved in that. I'm not directly involved in the Human Microbiome Project. I do microbiome-related research, but not through the NIH, although we are starting some studies with the NIH on treating HIV patients. And if there's time, I can make a mention of that. But the Human Microbiome Project is basically a $150, $160 million project to really study and understand the gut and how it influences our health. And as I mentioned, there's over 200 researchers involved in it all over the world. I think 80 or so research institutes, and a lot of publications are coming out. You know, what's surprising about the gut is that we've explored all kinds of areas on our Earth, right? We've looked at the deepest oceans, the highest mountains, we've gone into the rainforest and these really uninhabitable environments, and biologists really understand a lot of these environments. I mean, we've gone into space to the moon, but one of the areas on Earth that we know the least about is the area between your mouth and your bottom. You know, that's a huge complex ecology in your whole digestive tract that we knew nothing about until about 5.5-6 years ago, when data from the Human Microbiome Project started coming out. And so that realization is really what's changing our view on health and wellness and medicine, because we're starting to learn about the gut and what the gut actually does for us. And we can credit the Human Microbiome Project for that. Now, a spinoff from that is something called the American Gut Project. And it's quite interesting because every one of your listeners can send in a stool sample to the American Gut Project and get their stool sample analyzed for a couple hundred bucks by one of the top microbiologists in the country, if not in the world, in this subject. And they'll get a great report to give them an idea of what their microbiome looks like, you know, and what potential problems there may be within the microbiome. So if they look up the American Gut Project, it's a huge research consortium that is headed up by University of California, Davis, I think, and, you know, you can send in a sample and get your gut checked out.
So there are other laboratories that have been doing that for many years, such as Genova Labs, and we've been working with something called a comprehensive digestive stool analysis, which is an analysis of, it includes, let's say, it's even beyond that, but an analysis of the gut flora. We also look at a sensitivity of which natural antibiotics might be active against a particular kind of flora that you don't want there, so it's very specific. But it's interesting that this is a research project, and it sounds like the pricing for that is more reasonable than going through one of the private labs.
Yeah, the pricing is more reasonable, and there's two parts to working with the lab, and I think it's great to go through Genova or one of the other labs that actually do it. I think there's another one called Ubiome. And, you know, you typically will have to have a practitioner or doctor recommend it or order the test itself, which is totally fine. What's one of the benefits of going through the American Gut Project is that what they're doing is they're collating all the data that they're getting. So every time an individual sends in a sample, they document what that person's gut looks like based on where they live, their age, some information about their background. So they're actually helping propagate the science. You know, so
they
even if you have done
the research lab and offering the information to the public.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. And you know, even if you have done a test with one of the private labs, it's still a good idea to send it out. You know, and of course, it's a good idea to get your microbiome checked out periodically anyway, you know, because things change, right? So especially if you've been going through a new diet or a new workout program, or if you've been taking certain supplements, things that you're hoping to help your gut, you want to get in another sample to see what things are changing. So,
well, you know what? I am definitely going to look into that and also share that information with patients. But for right now, Kiran, we do have to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we will be coming back again. I do want our listeners to know that we are listening to a fantastic information, cutting-edge information, which you're not going to get even from your gastroenterologist. They should know this, but unfortunately, for some reason, they don't. But we're speaking today with researcher Kiran Krishnan, and you can find out more at thrivebiotic.com. That's Thrive, T-H-R-I-V-E, probiotic, P-R-O-B-I-O-T-I-C.com. And this will be listed as a live link on the archive of today's show, which will be posted shortly after we finish. So with that, we'll take a little break right here, and then we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss jojoba, the miracle plant of the desert.
Jojoba is spelled J-O-J-O-B-A, but is pronounced according to its Spanish origins. The jojoba plant grows in the American Southwest and the Sonoran Desert in Mexico. The jojoba is a large bush-like plant resembling mistletoe. It can reach a height of 15 feet and can live from 100 to 200 years. The Sonoran Indians have used the oil pressed from the jojoba beans for centuries. Father Juniper Serra, founder of 21 missions in California, noted in the early 1700s that the local Indians were using jojoba oil for treating sores, cuts, bruises, burns, and as a diet supplement, to soothe skin from sun and wind burns, as a cooking oil, and even as a beverage.
The importance of jojoba as a cash crop was proclaimed in 1935. But it was not until 1974, when the killing of sperm whales was banned, that the government began to study jojoba oil in depth as a substitute for whale oil. The National Academy of Sciences concluded jojoba oil has a radically different chemical structure than any other known oil. Most oils break down or turn rancid. Jojoba, on the other hand, is hypoallergenic, non-toxic, never turns rancid, and does not break down even under high temperature and pressure.
The University of California at Riverside did a study where they cooked 27 batches of popcorn in the same heated jojoba oil. The last batch was just as perfect as the first. These unusual properties are unique to jojoba oil because, chemically speaking, jojoba oil is not really an oil at all, but is a liquid wax. Its composition is almost identical to sebum, which is the oil secreted by human sebaceous glands to help to protect the skin from the environment.
Jojoba has a myriad of usages. The cosmetic industry takes advantage of its compatibility to human skin by adding it to shampoos, conditioners, moisturizers, and many other cosmetic products. In medicine, jojoba can be used directly on rashes, cuts, and psoriasis. It may also be used as a lubricant for artificial hearts. Jojoba contains a natural appetite suppressant, which can be used in weight loss products. It has no known side effects. In industry, jojoba is known to be a superior engine lubricant and will cause a car to run 20 to 30 degrees cooler when added to the crankcase oil.
So, if you are interested in a miracle plant from the desert, reach for jojoba in your natural medicine chest.
On The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We're so happy that you're joining us. Thank you so much. We would love to hear from you, and you can always get in touch with us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Either of those ways would be a wonderful way to get in touch with us, and we love to see you in person, and we have met so many of our listeners in person. One way to do that is to join us on our many excursions and adventures. We give classes outside in the field. We have some in New York City where we actually visit Chinatown and we study and learn from Chinese doctors such things as tongue and pulse diagnosis. We do a Qigong class right outside in the park in Chinatown, and it's sort of like a little day of going to a whole different country. And then again, if you really want to go to a different country, we have a trip once a year to the north coast of Jamaica, and we actually live with indigenous bush doctor shamanic healers for a week, and that class offers 3 college credits. So we're actually taking sign-ups for 2017, and you can find out more at naturalnurse.com or ecotoursforcures.com. Then we have many online certification classes. Our online herbal classes go on all the time. I think I have one later this afternoon, in fact, whatever day this is, and that is archived as well for those of you who listen to the show and would like to take that class in the future, and it's going to be about herbs that balance circadian rhythms, the dark and light cycle in our body, and that actually has CE credits for registered dietitians, naturopathic doctors, and we have credits available for nurses, midwives, acupuncturists, and massage therapists in many of our classes, which are available both on ground, in person, various venues across the country, and also online. So we have a lot of education going on. Dr. Zamperone and I have written many, many books that are available. You can find them at naturalnurse.com under books. And the list goes on and on. So we love to interact with you. We love to hear from you. So please get in touch. Today we have as our guest Kiran Krishnan, a research microbiologist who has been involved in the dietary supplement and nutrition market for the last 16 years. For those of you who are rejoining us, I think you certainly are aware of his high level of expertise. And he has completed postgraduate research in molecular biology and virology. And he's the chief scientific officer at Physicians Exclusive and Microbiome Labs. So we're talking to him today about all things probiotic. And if you think you've known about probiotics, and I would say I tend to keep up on this quite a bit, but have still learned so much new information from our guest today, Kiran Krishnan. So thank you and welcome back to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Hi, you're welcome and good to be back.
Now, you told us about the Human Microbiome Project, and we've been talking about probiotics. But where do probiotics actually come from? Do they, you know, invade us from the outside, or are we actually born with them?
So, yeah, you know, and there's two different terms to keep things absolutely straight and the way they should be. So all the bacteria that live within your gut, that are naturally found within your gut, you actually get from mom for the large part. So passing through the birth canal, you get the huge inoculum of bacteria from mom. A lot of mom's gut bacteria is found in the birth canal once she gets pregnant. And then, of course, through breastfeeding, which breast milk itself contains 600 to 800 different species of bacteria in it and about 200 different types of prebiotics. And the prebiotics can't even be digested by the baby for energy. It's there purely to help seed the bacteria that's coming in with the milk. And, of course, close interaction with mom and dad in the first couple years of life. So all of those exposures is what sets up the microbiome that we had spoken about earlier and all the organisms that naturally live in your gut. Now, those are typically referred to as commensal organisms. So commensal means commensal, if you break it down, means eating together. So commensal organisms are the symbiotic organisms that live in our gut that we've had from the day we were born, essentially, and we will have for the rest of our lives. Now, probiotics are bacteria that come in from the outside and are supportive of life and health. So the word probiotic means for life, as opposed to antibiotic, which means anti-life, of course. And so the probiotic bacteria that the vast majority of people are familiar with are bacteria that we were supposed to get when we were born, passing through mom's birth canal and all that, that we didn't end up getting or we don't have enough of within the gut. And what companies have done is taken those bacteria, kind of grow them up in factories, and then put them in capsules so that you can retake them. The idea behind those is that you're re-inoculating. Inoculating is a fancy term for infecting, if you will, but that's a wrong word to use because that's a negative connotation, but seeding your gut, really. That's a better word to use. It's reseeding your gut with these bacteria that are supposed to be there. And that's been the idea behind probiotics, but there's a new paradigm shift as well. So we could talk about what that paradigm shift in understanding how probiotics actually function, which is the latest of the science. So the big problem with the reseeding type of model is that you have to get those bacteria to your gut alive. And the vast majority of probiotic bacteria that are found in the marketplace die through the harsh gastric environment of the stomach. You know, the stomach has a very low pH. It's one of the most acidic natural environments you'll find. And it's actually called a gastric barrier because it's designed to kill off most bacteria, because a lot of bacteria come in with your food. And so your body protects itself by killing off a lot of bacteria in the stomach itself. And so a lot of those same probiotics are dying going through the stomach, so they're not actually getting to the intestines alive where they're supposed to act as a probiotic. So that's
saying
a big fundamental problem.
Okay, let's just clarify what you're talking about here. It's really important. So we're understanding the concept. First of all, I just want to make one comment about what you talked about in terms of the birth canal, Karan. It's very interesting that they do find that babies that are born through C-section, actually there's a disruption in the passing of the flora from the mother to the baby. And there's an actual technique with a doctor that I spoke with, and I believe I've had her on here as a guest, where they more modern physicians who understand this are actually doing a swab from the mother into the baby's mouth when they're born, if they're born cesarean, to try to reestablish the passing of the mother's flora. So this is, you know, becoming more and more well known. So thank you for sharing that with us. And now you're talking about the fact that people regularly take probiotics, thinking that it's going to reestablish healthy flora. But now you're telling us why, in some cases, that might not be working too well.
Exactly. You know, and I think a lot of people have probably, people who do take probiotics have probably experienced some degree of frustration that they can relate to, because they've probably tried a few different products and maybe have not seen the types of effects that they had hoped to see. And a lot of researchers, you know, I think there's a book out there published, I can't remember the title, but they were just talking about it on National Public Radio, that looked at the vast majority of scientific studies on your common types of probiotics, and the data is not that great. You know, there are certain strains that have shown really, really great efficacy in terms of a number of different issues within the body, but the large scale, most of the probiotics that are available on the marketplace don't really have any good scientific backing, and that's because of the one big issue is the survival issue. You know, we have to get live bacteria into the gut if we're trying to reseed and change the environment. And that's a big issue. So when your listeners are out there searching for a probiotic that they want to try, they need to look for one that has some evidence of its survival through the gastric system and getting to the intestines alive. If they don't, then you're just getting a whole bunch of dead bacteria moving through.
So how would someone know, in fact, if the particular probiotic that they are using is effectively being taken up by the body?
So that's a great question. Now, every company that I know of that has a probiotic that naturally survives makes it a point to market that portion of it. So, you know, when they're looking around at probiotics, if the product they're looking at, if their website, their label, all the things that describe the product, if they don't see on there somewhere a message about survival or testing that they've done to show that the probiotics survive and get into the intestines alive, then they can presume that it doesn't. Because of course companies will not advertise that their products do not survive, and so but the ones that I know that I've seen and worked with that do survive really do advertise that. So when they're looking around, look for something on the label or on the website of the company that talks about the survivability of their probiotic.
Okay, and we'd have to just kind of assume that that's true. However.
Yeah, right. You want to use your best judgment and look at the types of studies they've done, whether they've done it at a third-party independent lab, whether they named the lab. You know, that's an important thing as well. So a lot of times companies will say, you know, tested to survive the gastric system, but they did the test just internally on their own and they didn't use the right pH level of the stomach. You know, and a lot of people don't know this, but the pH levels in the stomach is a logarithmic scale. So some companies will use a pH of 3, for example, when you should be using a pH of 1.3. And the difference between 3 and 1.3 is almost 100,000-fold. So it's a big, big difference. You know, so those are the finer things. And I've worked with a few companies that have really done really rigorous testing in third-party, unbiased outside labs. And typically they will market or advertise that. Some of them will even make those laboratory reports available to you on their website, which is a great add-on. And I think we need that kind of transparency within the supplement industry.
Well, You are involved with some companies specifically that are doing this kind of testing. Is there some way people can tell that you can say, you know, look for something on the label that might be useful to be sure the testing has been done correctly?
Yeah, there's one, a new lab that I've been working with that I've sent a lot of my samples to, that we've been doing a couple of different research projects with them. It's a lab called Sun Genomics out of San Diego, California, and they're really kind of specializing in becoming the top probiotic lab. So what they're doing is offering a number of services to the industry to get their probiotic products tested for gastric survival, meaning survival through the stomach, and then also DNA verification to make sure that the strains that are claimed on the label are the same strains that are in the product. That's another huge issue with probiotics. So we could talk about that if there's time, but you want to see some sort of DNA verification so you know the strains you're taking are actually what is supposed to be in the product. So they've developed these great, robust assays. They're working with one of the University of California departments to validate the assays. And so they offer companies a badge, if you will, like a seal, that if the company gets the product tested at their lab, they allow them to use the seal on the label. So it'll say something like
the Good Housekeeping seal of approval.
Exactly like that. Yeah, exactly. And that's something that I'm very excited that they're doing because it makes it so much easier for people to really discern between what's a good test and what's a viable test and what's not, because no company will be allowed to utilize their seal or their stamp either on their website, marketing material, or label without actually having gone through the testing. So the seal will have a big check mark, and it should say Sun Genomics. It should say Gastric Survives.
Tell me that again, because I want to know for myself.
It's called Sun, S-U-N, and then Genomics, G-E-N-O-M-I-C-S.
Okay,
and it's a
so
circular
genomics,
seal with a big check
that'll
mark.
That'll say a seal, right? A seal on the bottle. Okay, and what else?
And it'll have a big check mark. And it'll say either gastric survives, so which means that it survived. It underwent the gastric testing, or it'll say DNA verified, or hopefully both. The DNA verified check means that it's been run through full DNA analysis of the probiotic strains within the product.
Okay.
And those strains have been vetted and checked out to be the same strains that are claimed on the label. Now, the reason why that's important, so University of California, Davis, published a study in November of 2015 where they went out and they went out to California, local California health food stores and online. They picked up 16 different probiotic products. And what they were looking to do is do full DNA sequencing on the strains that were in the bottles to see if they match what was on the label, what was claimed to be on the label. And of the 16 products they tested, only one matched the label claim.
Wow.
Only one. The other 15 had totally different bacteria in the product, in the capsule, than what was claimed on the label. And in some bottles, they had pill-to-pill variation, meaning within the same bottle, you take one pill one day, it has a certain types of bacteria, and the next pill the next day has totally different bacteria. And so you have no idea what you're taking. You know, which is kind of a scary thought, but that's where the quality aspect of things come from. The only way for a company to really know if the powder that they're putting into a capsule is actually Lactobacillus acidophilus or Bacillus subtilis or rhamnosus or whatever the strains are that they're trying to put into the formulation, the only way that they know that that powder is actually that bacteria is by getting that powder DNA sequenced. You know, and that, it's an expensive thing to do. It takes a little bit of time, but the really good companies are doing that now so that they can prove that what they're claiming on the label is actually in the product.
Wow. That is great information. Well, we're going to go to another break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z so that Progressive Radio Network can tell our listeners about some of the other wonderful programming in addition to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. And when we come back, we will continue our fascinating discussion with today's guest, Kiran Krishna, and our topic on probiotics. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Progressive Radio Network, the station for critical issues from critical minds.
This is Peter Roth, host of Energy Stew, Friday mornings at 11:30 Eastern Time. Did you know we're all dealt special cards in life that we have to live with? And this is according to our birth dates. It's a very old and accurate system. Hillary Clinton was born to the Nine of Hearts, and Donald Trump was born to the Three of Diamonds. Find out what that means about them and why they behave the way they do on Energy Stew, Friday morning at 11:30.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Michael Walt, and I'm proud to announce that I'm the host of a new show right here on PRN every Saturday at 1 o'clock entitled Ask the Blood Detective. And as your friendly neighborhood blood detective, I'll be exploring all the cutting-edge, important health topics, which will include everything from foods to technology to supplementation and how it impacts your current health so that you can either reach health, maintain good health, or shoot for optimal health and longevity. But what is different about this show is that I'll be describing and teaching you how to interpret your own laboratory tests to find hidden nutritional and health meaning when many other healthcare providers fail to do so. So tune in with me every Saturday at 1 o'clock. Ask the Blood Detective. See you soon.
Progressive Radio Network. The Thinking Person Station.
Welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And if you've been listening, you know that we are speaking with Karan Krishnan, research microbiologist, and having a fascinating conversation about everything from the consciousness and ability of microorganisms to influence us, such as by increasing our desire for certain foods, which are the foods they need. That's a pretty big concept right there. And the fact that although many people do know that microorganisms are involved in so many aspects of our health and wellness, including inflammation and pain, things like headaches. Now, I have heard, I don't know if you have any information about this, Karan, that people who get migraine headaches, it may be due to the cyclic sort of life cycle of various microorganisms that may actually reside in the brain. And when they have what would be called a bloom, that is something that relates to increased pressure.
Yeah, there is some evidence of that, and there's more research to be done with that. There is, and there's definitely a circadian rhythm or microbial cycle that happens within the body, similar to our own circadian rhythm. And one of the issues is having our circadian rhythm misaligned with that of our microbes. And when you have the two circadian rhythms that aren't in sync, it can actually cause a number of issues, things like sleep issues, inability to relax. It can cause anxiety and difficulty in dealing with stressful situations. And then, of course, as you mentioned, some recent evidence that it may have some ties to the migraines as well. And there's some evidence as well that an overgrowth of yeast or fungus within the body, candida in particular, can also lead to migraine and brain fog issues and kind of those, you know, just that feeling of grogginess and headaches. Because one of the things that they do when they metabolize sugars is they produce aldehydes and alcohol derivatives. So those alcohol derivatives are actually getting into your bloodstream and increasing your blood alcohol level. So it's almost like drinking without the fun of drinking, you know, and you're always a little bit hungover. And that can cause that, you know, brain fog and migraines and things like that as well. So there's a lot of ties to those types of symptomologies and what's going on with the microbes in your body.
Yeah, there are, and people aren't aware of that. So you are just giving us such great information. Now, what I saw a little bit of sort of new data on something called spore-based Bacillus strains. What are they and why are they so special?
Yeah, they are a really fascinating set of bacteria. So they're some of the oldest bacteria that have been found on Earth. They've been around, in very similar form to what they're in right now, since the age of the dinosaurs, really. And so there's some really good evidence showing that these particular strains have been around for those millions of years. And they predate humans, but they were, of course, always present during the course of human evolution as well, and are found quite abundantly within the natural pristine environment. So if you were to go into the Sahara Desert or you go for a hike in the woods, undisturbed woods, you'll find these bacteria in the dirt, on the plants, in the rivers and streams and all that. So our ancestors consumed, who were hunters and gatherers and foragers, they lived off the land, they got dirty all the time, and they ate dirt, essentially. They got huge doses of these particular organisms every single day. And because of that long-term interaction between humans and these particular organisms, we develop this great symbiotic relationship with them, where we provide them a home, they use the human gut as their primary home, and then they in turn provide a whole bunch of services for us. You know, so that's the definition of a symbiotic relationship. And what they do, what they've been able to do is create this form called an endospore, which is a protected version of themselves. So anytime they leave the body, like, you know, you defecate them out, they leave the body, and when they leave the body, they get into the spore form, which has like an armor-like coating around themselves. So that way they can survive in the harsh outside environment for an indefinite amount of time. Then when you swallow them, because they're in this spore form with this armor-like coating, they easily survive through the harsh gastric system, and then they get into your gut. And within about 8 minutes or 8 to 10 minutes, they come out of that spore form and become a live vegetative cell within your digestive tract. So they become a live functioning probiotic cell within your digestive tract. So they've been designed by nature to go through this process of being swallowed, passing through the gastric system, and then coming out of their armor-like coating once they pass the harsh environment, and they're in the intestines, and then they go to work for you as what I would call the gut police. You know, so what they do in the gut is a very different thing than what we hoped other probiotics would do, which is the whole reseeding idea. They instead go in and regulate the gut, which is a totally different function in a probiotic.
What do you mean by that, regulate the gut?
I was hoping you'd ask me. So regulate the gut, so they actually act as a gut police. One of the things that they can do, which is really interesting, is a fancy word for it. It's called quorum sensing. Quorum sensing basically means bacteria's ability to read one another's chemical signatures. So every bacteria within your gut and within the environment as well put out a very specific chemical signature. Other bacteria can read that signature and figure out what types of bacteria are in their environment. So one of the first things they do is they get into the gut and they start reading the environment. When they sense the presence of overgrown or harmful bacteria, they can actually directly eliminate those bacteria by producing upwards of 25 different antibiotics in the intestines at the site of action. So they actually clean out the bad bacteria. Now, at the same time, they produce compounds like short-chain fatty acids, and they produce certain types of fibers that will actually feed the good bacteria within your gut. So the first thing they do when they're in there is they shift the balance to good and bad bacteria. We talked about dysbiosis earlier. That's the imbalance within the gut. They help shift that balance back. And that's why they act as a police. They're one of the few bacteria that actually can do that. And then they also train the immune system. So, you know, we talked about earlier, so much of your immune system, 75-80% of your immune system is actually in your gut, and your immune system requires the presence of certain types of bacteria in order to learn how to function. One of the things that these guys do really well is interact with the immune system in the gut and train it to help it figure out what things to attack and what things not to attack. So in the case of autoimmune conditions, it can really be supportive because it helps the immune system regulate itself so that it suppresses attacking your own tissue. It can also help regulate itself to suppress attacking things like allergens, you know, dairy, gluten, ragweed, pollen, all the things that people tend to suffer from. So they do a really great number on modulating and helping train the immune system itself. And then they change the environment. They reduce gas production in the gut by about 50% in some of the studies that I've been involved in doing. We just finished a study with them on liver failure patients who tend to have really high blood ammonia levels, and we were able to bring down their blood ammonia levels using these strains because they're so good at reducing the gas production in the body and in the gut itself. So they change the environment that way. They acidify the environment, and they make it more favorable for your good bacteria that you got from mom to grow.
Wow, that is very, very complex information, and we are just up against the next, you know, we're just about up of time, and our time for today, but we're so happy to have you as a guest. So why don't you just give us a wrap-up in terms of where people can get more information about you and your work, or more information about all the probiotics that you've been sharing with us today, Kiran?
You know, ThriveProbiotic.com, that's one of the probiotics that I work with, and we're doing some good research with that probiotic. So that's a good place to learn a lot about the spores themselves. So THRIBE, Thrive Probiotic. And there's a lot of good research information on there. They can also, on YouTube, I have a number of presentations and webinars and all that. If they just spell out my name, K-I-R-A-N is the first name, last name, K-R-I. S-H-N-A-N, and if they look up gut microbiome probiotic with my name on YouTube, you'll find a whole bunch of webinars and presentations from different conferences that people have recorded and put up on there so they can get more information. But the Thrive Probiotic is the one that I do a lot of research with and work with, and I really like those. They are the spore-based probiotics.
Okay, well, thank you so much, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in once again to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. Find me at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Stay healthy.